This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Are you driving your car or doing laundry right now? Podcasts go best when they're bundled with another activity. Like Progressive home and auto policies, they're best when they're bundled too. Having these two policies together makes insurance easier and could help you save. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. Quote a home and car bundle today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On the Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to the Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
With 20-plus Democratic candidates vying for the nomination, one way to get attention is to stake out bold positions on controversial issues. And that may be why we're seeing at least 8 candidates endorsing in one form or another a move toward reparations for historical wrongs against African Americans. One of the most outspoken on the issue is former HUD Secretary Julian Castro, whom I talked to recently.
I've long believed that we should consider reparations. Because, you know, as I see it, it's one of those moral debts, this original sin of the country that has not been paid. Some people say, well, nobody alive today was a slaveholder, nobody alive today was a slave. And I say, if the government takes your property today and then you pass away tomorrow, your estate still has a claim for that taking.
Kamala Harris, Cory Booker, Elizabeth Warren, and others are all talking about the issue, and even a long-shot candidate, like Marianne Williamson, the self-help guru, has suggested a dollar value for reparations, which she puts at $100 to $500 billion. To understand how this issue suddenly became so hot in 2020 campaign politics, I caught up with our Washington correspondent, Susan Glasser. Susan, in 1989, 30 years ago, John Conyers introduced H.R. 40, a bill which would set up a commission to study reparations. Now, how has this issue been treated by Washington for the last 30 years?
Well, I would say the fact that it hasn't gone anywhere for 30 years and that actually Congressman Conyers spent decades introducing it every year and then ultimately retired without it going anywhere. It's now, the cause has been taken up now by Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee, is a reminder that it's been seen as something that's too hot to handle.
Because it was considered marginal, is what you're saying.
Well, not just marginal, actually. I think really too politically controversial. There is a deep aversion on Capitol Hill to doing things that are seen as explicitly race-conscious legislative actions. I do think that up until now, even many senior members of the Black Caucus, for example, while endorsing the measure, have been wary of pursuing it too far because they've perceived or feared that the term reparations itself might be a turnoff to people who might otherwise support those proposals. When you have seen some of these candidates who've endorsed the concept of reparations asked about it, like Kamala Harris, for example, she has quickly pivoted to not really talk about reparations so much as, oh, by the way, I have this proposal about housing, or I have this proposal about a tax credit, things like that. And you see many of the candidates doing that.
Seems to me that the one person in the race that has a very specific proposal to put forward that's related at least to reparations is Cory Booker of New Jersey, Senator Cory Booker, who sponsored a bill to study reparations in the Senate and has been a vocal proponent of something called baby bonds. Could you explain what that is?
Senator Booker's proposal of baby bonds, as I understand it, would essentially give a certain amount of money to parents and the studies.
He would give $1,000 to every newborn child, essentially beginning an account.
Well, that's right. And the people who favor this have studied what would the impact of it be. And that's where it appears that it would really disproportionately benefit Black families because they have, in fact, disproportionately suffered from the lack of family wealth. There's such an incredible gap still. The numbers are so striking between the average wealth of an African-American family vis-a-vis a white family in this country. But again, it's not targeted. It doesn't have the words African-American in the title of the proposal. It would benefit poor families from different backgrounds across the board. And yet, because it would be of particular benefit to the Black community, it's something that Senator Booker talks about when he talks about his support for reparations overall.
Senator Warren has a bill which would support communities affected by redlining, and which was really the core of Ta-Nehisi Coates's article, the description of redlining in Chicago, housing policy in Chicago, and the racism that was involved there and is there. What do you make of the politics of that position?
You know, Senator Warren has been by far the sort of dominant policy voice and ideas generator in the campaign. And she's had a longstanding interest dating back to that Coates article and perhaps even before that on the divergent impacts of, say, credit and access to credit on African Americans and other communities. That was her academic field of interest at Harvard Law School. And I think the measures that she's proposed on redlining are kind of comparable to that in a way, and looking at targeted ways, very specific ways in which communities, minority communities, are impacted by unequal access to things like credit or mortgages. And so, you know, I find that to be a really fruitful and much more realistic form of the reparations conversation than to think that America is suddenly going to engage in a big national soul-searching and on-the-level debate about history and the terrible long-term costs of slavery in the United States.
Now, Joe Biden, who entered the race recently, is now way ahead in the polls. He's way ahead of Bernie Sanders, and the two of them are ahead of almost everybody else, 20-odd candidates. Where is Joe Biden on reparations, and where's Bernie Sanders?
I have a sense that it's something that Biden would support in a general sense. It's not a pillar of his campaign. Now, Bernie Sanders is an interesting figure in this discussion. He explicitly refused to endorse this in the 2016 campaign, received some criticism around this. And as you know, the Sanders campaign in general in 2016 in the primaries found it hard for him to connect with African-American voters. He did not draw a significant amount of his support. And in general, as a democratic socialist by his own definition, Sanders has long favored the types of reform proposals that look to fix economic inequality rather than focusing on race-based discrimination. And so, you know, there's an uncomfortableness that you see from Bernie Sanders in taking on something like this. And I think Sanders may end up doing well with a coalition that is even whiter than the coalition that he had in 2016 because those voters have other candidates to support this time.
Where is the national polling around reparations? Who's for it? Who's against it? Whether it's studying reparations or doing something even more concrete?
Well, again, I think many surveys don't register this. It's not been at the top of the agenda. I was struck by the fact that there were a couple polls, one in 2016, one in 2018, which both found remarkably similar levels of support for it, only around 26%, around a quarter of the country saying in these surveys that they favored reparations. So it's not the thing that foremost springs to mind, but that in part reflects the lack of sustained national attention around the conversation, I would say.
Obviously, this conversation is taking place in the context of a presidency that is marked by Charlottesville. It's marked by racist rhetoric. There's really no other way to put it, to be truthful. So how does a conversation, at least in the Democratic primary race, on reparations play in terms of the overall politics of the country in November 2020?
I suspect that one of the reasons is Donald Trump. One of the reasons is the racist rhetoric coming from the President of the United States. One, looking at the post-Charlottesville world and political discourse that we're having, and that this is a way of resistance. It's a way for Democratic candidates to come out and say, not only am I in favor of doing the historically correct thing, but also it's a way of marking yourself in opposition to the sort of toxic racial politics coming out of the president. I'm here in Washington, where we've been having this fascinating debate at Georgetown University about the concept of the university's possible reparations owed to the descendants of slaves who were sold by the Jesuit founders of the school to keep it afloat.
Thanks a lot, Susan. Always good talking to you.
Oh, thank you very much. It's a great conversation.
Susan Glasser is a Washington correspondent for The New Yorker.